Hello, learners. It's Jauncey here. I just wanted to quickly pop in and give you guys a content warning before we continue with the rest of the episode. So you probably saw it in the title and description, but we will be talking about food today and will include things like calories, diet culture, and body image. Now, we are mainly focusing on the neurological and biological perspective of this. We don't have any detailed graphic descriptions about disordered eating. And we also tried our best to use inclusive language, but it may still be triggering for some. So if you think that this is a sensitive topic for you and that it is in your best interest to not listen, we really appreciate your support nevertheless, and we're happy to have you in the next episode. We are very dedicated towards creating a safe and inclusive space where everyone feels heard. So please make the choice that is best for you. And also in the description of this episode and on our website, where we always include additional resources to go with each episode, we have included resources about eating disorders and a national hotline in case you need help. And now on to the rest of the episode. Hello, learners, and welcome to Learn On Podcast, the science show by kids for kids. I'm your host, Jauncey, and today I'm here with a very special guest. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Sure. Hi, my name's TJ. I am a researcher at the University of Michigan, and I work with Professor Monica Deuce, who is kind of a leader in a field called nutrigenomics.
Very cool. So can you explain to our listeners a little bit more in depth what is the research you currently do and what your experience has been with research in the past?
Yeah. So currently I look in kind of two areas. One is how sugar impacts the overall health of our brain. So I kind of look at the resilience of our neurons, which are the individual cells that make up our brain. And I see just basically how sugar and how the metabolism of sugar within those cells affects their structure and their ability to function the way that they should. So that's kind of one area that I work in. And then the other is something that's kind of new for our lab, and that's seeing how we can model human eating disorder behaviors in the organism we work in, which is flies. And we're doing that because within the fly, we know a lot about how reward is mediated related to sugar feeding. And we're seeing kind of how we can use that to help human research, basically.
That's very interesting. So I'm curious in learning a little bit more about your story with research as to what made you interested in this particular area of study and how you knew that you wanted to go into academia.
Yeah, so I originally worked in a lab also at this university a few years ago, and I was studying how our nervous system responds to injury. So something kind of similar to like a spinal cord injury. I worked in animals and we looked at kind of what impact that had on the nervous system and how we could help recovery, basically. So when I was finishing grad school, I met Monica and I started to move more into metabolism. And since that's kind of the area she works in, and I was really impressed by all the work that she's done, I wanted to kind of move into a similar kind of area. And I got interested in sugar specifically because our brain makes up about 2% of our body weight, but it actually uses 20% of our available sugar. So a huge amount of our sugar actually goes just to our brain. And I wanted to learn more about kind of what it does with that and what happens when sugar isn't being used correctly and how that relates to the health in general. So that's kind of how I made the transition from looking at injury to looking at basically how the brain eats sugar.
That's super interesting. So I guess we can focus a little bit more now on your specific area of research. So for our listeners, can you explain to us what neurodegeneration and disordered eating is?
Sure. So neurodegeneration kind of broadly is, you can either look at it physically, which is what I tend to do, and that would be the death of neurons or the breakdown of their connections. So as I mentioned, neurons are the cells that make up our brain, and they do their job by sending out these really long connections that are sort of like wires, and they can communicate to each other, and that's what lets us think. So when neurodegeneration happens, you can have the loss of those connections, and that can be seen in things like dementias, like Alzheimer's. When we lose those connections, we lose a lot of function, and there can be a lot of really devastating side effects. So it's kind of one area that I look at. The other that you brought up, disordered eating, very broadly, like speaking not just humans, but animals in general, just the idea of disordered eating is any kind of irregular eating pattern that deviates from the normal way it's regulated that causes health problems. I know it's kind of broad. In general, there's supposed to be this pattern of throughout the day, you get hungry, which means your body needs to take in nutrients and calories for energy. So you eat, and then you fulfill that hunger, and then you're sated, and then you kind of wait until you're hungry again. And then there's this normal feedback pattern. With disordered eating, that gets interrupted. And again, I work with animals, so we kind of look at just the basics of feeding. But in humans, it can get a lot more complicated. There's a lot more psychology there. And then that connects to actual, like, diagnosed eating disorders, which involves not just eating, but also perception of the body and mood.
Right. So actually in that aspect, I'm interested in learning a little bit more because with studying disordered eating in humans, there's a very holistic approach with the psychological aspect and then also the biological aspect. And if someone has a good support system, they'll often have people studying and helping them out in many different aspects of how disordered eating may be affecting their physical and mental health, which goes back to the idea of the mind-body connection that we've explored on a podcast before. So, how does that differ from the way that you study disordered eating in animals?
Sure. So, like I mentioned, in the animals, we can't really get at the very complex psychology that, of course, human eating disorders will have. So, we focus largely on the physical with the biology and then the neurological with the actual firing of neurons. We do get a little bit into like the very, very basic psychology that animals can have as far as like taste and reward and motivation. But again, we're not going to get into things like societal interactions or body image. So, the way that we tend to work is we look at what are some of the main behaviors in humans that make up these different disorders? How can we look at them in animals, and what can we learn from animals that's going to be important for people trying being treated for these disorders, basically? So what we tend to do right now, I'm working in fruit flies, which I know seem really far removed from humans, but they actually share a lot of our genetics. So they're surprisingly similar to us in the way that some of their neural pathways work. And what I'm doing is looking at two groups of neurons. They're both involved in dopamine reward, which we know can be very affected by eating disorders. I study, again, sugar, because that's what our lab does. And sugar is a very big reward for flies. So what I'm looking at is how these two different groups of neurons change flies' feeding behavior, and how if we model either binging behavior or purging behavior through regurgitation, how both of those can change the way the dopamine fires in the brain. And how that leads to basically health consequences. So, kind of what we're looking at now is how, when an animal eats sugar, this is true for us and mammals and also flies. When we eat sugar, we get kind of two different signals from it. One is that very fast, immediate sweet taste, the other is a more delayed nutrient signaling. So, actually, when we eat food and it goes into our digestive tract, we're able to sense that we've eaten real caloric sugar. So, that's kind of the difference between like artificial sweetener versus real sugar. Both of them might taste sweet, but when they actually enter your digestive tract, one of those has calories and the other doesn't. And we're able to sense which is which. And I'm kind of studying that kind of distinction and looking in flies.
That's really interesting. And actually, you kind of indirectly answered a question that I've always been wondering about for a long time as to like the nutritional difference between real and artificial sugar and how that, if our body can tell, and how that impacts the way that we eat. So that's really interesting. And then also, you mentioned dopamine and reward signaling, which is kind of a perfect segue into the next thing that I was wondering about. So I feel like there's a lot of information on the internet and just in the world in general about how sugar can affect our bodies and our minds. And many of our listeners may have heard of how sugar can be addicting because it invokes pleasure, which is true. But is that necessarily always good? When can that become harmful? And can you kind of explain the biological mechanisms behind this process and how it really works?
Yeah, it's a great question. So first, I can start with the last part, actually, like the biological process of how that reward works. So when we taste sugar, again, we get that sweet taste, and I'll focus just on that part for now because we know a bit more on that part. So again, using flies or mammals, when you get that sweet taste, usually an animal will eat, until it gets a certain amount of input, sensory, and also nutrient from digestion that tells it that it's eaten enough at that moment. And the kind of the study of meal size is really interesting because it's not just the sensations you're getting in the moment, it's also memory. And so we're kind of looking at the intersection of sensation and memory to determine how that affects how much an animal is going to eat per a given meal. And like you said about like, what's the relevance for this for humans? How does this relate to something like addiction or eating a certain amount based on reward? What we know so far is that if you put an animal on a high sugar diet, it will over time have a blunted sweet taste. So when it eats something with say like a certain amount of sugar compared to an animal that was on a normal diet, that animal on the high sugar diet can't taste as well anymore. And so when it tastes that sugar, it's not as sweet. And if you actually look in the brain of that animal, it doesn't fire as much dopamine, which means it's not getting as much reward as it's supposed to be getting for that sugar. The consequence of that is that the animal actually eat more to try and fulfill the reward it's not getting. So it'll end up eating way more food than it needs to because it needs to get more sweet taste to get as much reward as it's looking for, basically. And so that's our understanding of how if an animal is on a high sugar diet, it can lead to actually overeating beyond just that diet. As far as addiction, that's a really interesting question related to the disordered eating area. There's actually a lot of similarity. There is actual food addiction is in its actual own disorder. But in general, the idea of addiction and altered dopamine pathways has a lot to do with eating disorders. And that's an area that we're also looking at.
Yeah, that's super interesting. And I guess an important takeaway for that is that enjoying sweet things isn't always bad, but just doing it in moderation so that it truly gives you that satisfaction, that feeling of reward, rather than consuming it so often that it doesn't become as meaningful anymore. And I find it really interesting how it's so complex dealing with sugar reward and just food in general, because if you compare it to like the studies of addiction, for example, there are little to no health benefits of substances that people can get addicted to. Whereas with sugar, like we have to consume it for our survival. And it's like our bodies are built with pathways to digest glucose, but at the same time, too much can also be bad for you. And so I find it really interesting how it's good to sort of find that balance in between and what really makes you the happiest and also satisfies you and has good nutritional content. And then I want to pivot more towards the side of neurodegeneration. So I think neurodegeneration can be a really scary term when you define it for us earlier. And we've discussed previously a lot of different biological disorders that can cause neurodegeneration. So how does something that we consume like sugar play a role in that?
Yeah. So as I mentioned about how important sugar is for the brain, for its energy source, it makes it sort of this double-edged sword, which I think you got it really well, that like feeding is something that we have to do to sustain ourselves, which makes it really unique compared to the forms of drug addiction. It's something that we can't stop completely. Eating too little or eating too much can both have health issues. And looking specifically at sugar and neurodegeneration, because the brain is so sensitive to sugar, it needs that in order to function correctly. If you interfere with its ability to process sugar, you can cause various neurological problems. But on the other hand, of course, if you eat too much sugar, you can develop something like type 2 diabetes. The most common complication of that is neuropathy or the death of our nerves. And that can lead to things like loss of sensation or tingling or pain. And that's sort of the question of how does the brain make sure it gets just the right amount of sugar, not too little and not too much that it causes problems. And I think you had a great point about we need it in moderation. We don't want to get rid of it completely, but we also don't want to have too much of it.
Right. Yeah. And so this is something that I'm more curious about because on this podcast, we talk a lot about connecting like a biology and neuroscience and the mind-body connection again. And so with these side effects that too much sugar can have, like neurodegeneration, we often like talk and stress on the biological perspective, but can it also possibly negatively affect mental health?
Yeah, that's something we're actually looking at in a lab right now, looking at mood and diet, both high sugar and also a low sugar diet, like a keto diet. What we know so far is that sugar can definitely, it correlates with altered impulse control and stress response, which can definitely themselves affect mental health. I think it's still kind of an open area how much sugar impacts and the way that it impacts our health. But I would say broadly, we do know that like diet is very important for physical health, and changes in that can absolutely affect our mental health.
That makes a lot of sense. And also considering the psychological effects of eating disorders themselves, like you mentioned earlier, it's much more complex in humans than in animals. And that can also be something really challenging to work through. So I'm glad that you mentioned that. And for more information for our listeners, there are a lot of misconceptions about food, I feel like floating around just everywhere. And diet culture is such a big, prominent thing in our world. With nutritional advice, there are so many great people out there offering really helpful advice that's tailored to the individual. But then there's also a lot of insidious advice out there that may not be given with bad intention. But when you're considering that sort of one size fits all perspective, something that may be really helpful for one person in adjusting their diet may only make it worse for someone else. So, in your research, looking at it from a scientific perspective, are there any major relevant misconceptions you've encountered with food and eating disorders and reward signaling that you would like to debunk for us?
Yeah, and I really like that you mentioned the one size fit all advice not always being the best. Over the last, like about the last century, we've focused a lot on weight gain and the idea that like after industrialization, we have a lot more processed foods, more added sugar, more added fat, more added salt. And those have definitely caused a lot of health problems. But one of the consequences, I think that you mentioned already about that general advice that we've been giving in the past couple of decades about avoiding eating too much, is sometimes we'll frame food and calories as something negative, as something that we're supposed to avoid, we're supposed to limit calories, we don't want to eat too much. But there's also the fact that it's not a bad thing for our body. Like our body runs off of food. If we don't get enough nutrients or enough calories, that can cause a lot of problems. So I think the biggest misconception I've seen is that if we take the diet advice a little bit too far and we start to make it seem like we should feel bad for eating anything, I think it's important to remember that every time we eat, we're taking care of our body. Like that's its own form of like self-care, I guess you could call it. The idea that, you know, our body needs us to feed it if we want it to function correctly. So we shouldn't view it as a bad thing. We should just see it as what it is, fuel for us to be able to take care of ourselves, to heal, to do activity.
Definitely. I think that perspective is so important. And it almost like it really irks me whenever I see that kind of general advice where we're enforcing this information about food onto everyone can be really harmful. So I think it's so important that we break down those misconceptions about sugar. And of course, it is important to eat in moderation and also to not fall into that addiction with the reward signaling. But taking it too far can have just as many or even more negative outcomes. So, finally, how can we apply the information discussed today for good? I know you had mentioned before that we are studying animals as a model representation of eating disorders in humans. So, how can we scale that up and apply that to the way that we treat eating disorders in humans? And also, kind of thinking about preventative care for neurodegeneration. Or using sugar to benefit ourselves. I'm just curious about the different things that you have considered with how your research can be applied.
Yeah. So for the first part, you asked about the eating disorders. Like you've already mentioned, we talked about earlier how what we do in animals is much more simple compared to humans. There's so much more psychology in humans in the basis of eating disorders. So I think what we're learning from animals, I think, has to be translated a bit more into human research before we can make a lot of conclusions off of it. So far, our understanding is just that our diet can have a pretty strong impact on what we eat in the future. And I think it just sort of will help inform treatment with patients, the idea that it's not just our psychology, but it's also our psychology on top of what we're eating that can lead to changes in reward, basically, which can impact that. But again, I think that is something we're going to have to do a bit more with humans before we can translate that other way. But it's an interesting question. But for the second part, for the sugar, I think that is something where there's a lot more for both humans and animals to talk about. And that seems to be, in my opinion, at least I think you mentioned that sugar isn't something bad. and that there are plenty of things like fruit where, yes, they have a fair amount of sugar in it, but there's a lot of really good vitamins and minerals, antioxidants in fruit that we should really be getting. And so I think the way that we can use our understanding of sugar to benefit ourselves is that what we've learned with diet is that it's when you are adding a lot of sugar to everything an animal's eating, that's a lot of the times when we see that blunted sweet taste, when we see those health effects. So if we can focus on avoiding just having added sugar to a bunch of things that don't need it, like if you go to the store and you buy pretty much anything that's comes like processed, a lot of the times, even things you wouldn't expect, like plain potato chips, will have sugar added to it. So if we can just avoid getting sugar in things that don't need them and just get it from things like fruit, and like it's okay to eat dessert every once in a while, but just avoiding that kind of constant added sugar in every meal, I think is the thing that will benefit us the most to get to moderation.
Yeah, and I look forward to learning more about your research and hopefully seeing really exciting things coming in the future. And so, also for our listeners who are interested in learning more, we will have your information and past work linked down below if, people want to read more about it. And this has been really great. I had a great time discussing with you, and I learned a lot myself as well. So, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.